The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
You have your page of Rav Kook. It's actually very appropriate to the very tragic news coming out of England right now, London right now, about the Al-Qaeda attack in the subways. In all cultures and in all religious philosophies, we see only the expansion of the central point, the natural feeling of faith and of simple piety. In order to broaden its horizon, to develop the potency embodied in it, it is necessary to pursue all the peripheral studies, the practical and the speculative, the intellectual and the emotional. The success of those studies depends on the extent to which they are linked to the vital essence of the human soul, which radiates a mighty radiance of life, the Jewish soul especially. Kook really is revealing an extremely important point. First off, he says that all culture, all religious philosophies are really addressing, seeking to expand, I would add, express the natural feeling of faith. Emunah is natural. Everybody has it because everybody is it. It's the soul becoming manifest, or the essence of the soul becoming manifest. And it's interesting, in Jewish tradition, for instance, when you read the Shema, so it's here in the Shema that if you live my mitzvot, then I will bring rain in its time, and you'll go out and you will gather your produce. And then it says, and watch out lest you forget and begin to serve idols. What's interesting is the Torah does not offer an option of atheism. It's atheism. Either you're serving God or you're serving idols, but in the infamous words of Bob Dylan, you're going to have to serve somebody. Right? Atheism is just not an option, because emunah is natural to the human being. We need to breathe, we need to eat, we need to sleep, we need to believe. A human being just naturally believes. The question is not to believe or not to believe. That is the question. That is not the question. Okay? To believe or not to believe is not the question. It's what to believe. But everybody is, in essence, religious. Because everybody believes something. And really the goal of education is to expand that natural belief and refine that natural belief. But we all have it. We all believe in something. And some people believe just the most horrendous things. And some people believe the most beautiful things, and you wonder why. And the answer is because everybody's got to believe something. It's just their nature to believe. We intuit that we are part of some greater cause, that our life is meaningful in dedicating ourselves to some ideal or some God or whatever other than ourselves. It's a natural inclination of the human being. But now, that could be played out in a healthy way, or that could be played out in an incredibly destructive way. A number of years ago, one of my students, living in San Diego, smelt a terrible stench in the neighborhood, didn't know what was going on, and then she sees a number of ambulances, police cars pull up in front of the ranch next door. And this was the famous case in San Diego of a group, I believe their name was Heaven's Gates, where they all killed themselves. Right? They had a charismatic leader. I believe they all were wearing Adidas, Nikes. And they believe that there is a starship that will be passing by at a certain time, and to get aboard this starship, you have to kill yourself. So this was like devastating, and she was living next door to this group of people. They seemed like a nice group of people, some kind of commune, and they all killed themselves. So at the time, there were all these articles about belief in religion. I recall one article, actually I recall the headline of the article, which I found very interesting. Why do reasonable people have unreasonable beliefs? Right? And everyone described these people to be reasonable people. Nobody thought they were cultish or weirdos. In fact, most of them were actually computer programmers, so they were making money. They weren't derelicts or homeless or anything. They were people. And they believe this guy? I mean, the most ridiculous of ridiculous, but and they all simultaneously kill themselves to get on board to some spaceship? Like, why would reasonable people have unreasonable beliefs? Right? Now, take it a step further, when people in the name of God are killing people, right? Putting explosions in subways, buses, in the name of God, killing children, women, innocent. It's like, why do people believe what they believe? Well, the first thing you have to know is because we need to believe. And if you don't properly nourish the need to believe, then you become a victim of very sick beliefs. For instance, just metaphorically, you know, sometimes in the midst of a very busy day, I forget to eat, right? You might have experienced that. You just don't get a chance to eat. You finally get home at the end of the day and you're famished. So at that point where you're so hungry, right, you just open up the fridge. And you'll probably just grab for the first thing you'll go. You really don't have the state of mind, the calm necessary in order to make a real responsible choice. I discovered an interesting truth about dieting, that you should never skip breakfast if you want to lose weight, right? Which is what most people do. Right? As they figure, oh, I can skip breakfast, and you know, this way I'll be eating less. But what they show is that it so wreaks havoc in your system that by the time you get to the night, you're so hungry, you start getting all carved out, and you start eating chocolates and this and that. So really, if you have a good breakfast in the morning, you actually will lose weight because you won't get into this, like, total stressing, noshing, you know, binging mode at night. Right? And that was very interesting. And I experienced that. Well, when I started doing that, I realized, like, I'm not so hungry at night because you plan. But if you don't have a good spiritual diet, right, the body needs food. But the food of the soul are ideas. Right? The food of the soul is wisdom. And if you let your soul starve, right, well, then what happens is you're starving. Right? And if you're starving, you just don't have the calm, collective, responsible head to even, so what happens is when you see these people get into cults and the beliefs that they have just seem so ridiculous that how could a reasonable person have an unreasonable belief? But if they were nourishing their soul intuits that they are a ray of divine light. But that intuition could be very primitive, and they're seeking ways to satisfy that truth, live that truth. So if some charismatic leader comes in there and spews out all these ideas of how you serve God and how you commit yourself to ideals greater than yourself, one could be incredibly vulnerable to such beliefs. The Rambam, Maimonides, in his book, The Guide to the Perplexed, he talks about the superstitions in the, you know, early ancient days. And he writes some of the superstitions, and you're like, you can't believe people actually believe these things. If a ray of light happens to hit, you know, at this time, the rear end of a donkey, it means this. And like, all kinds of, like, you read this stuff, you go like, wow. You wonder, how do people believe this stuff? And, you know, the whole idea of selling snake oil, it's like, it still goes on. It's just unbelievable what people will buy into if you're just emphatic enough and consistent enough. Then it's amazing what some people will start saying they really believe. Now, that's faith. That's not what Judaism's about. But the question is, emunah, which is that deep intuitive knowing of who you are, now seeks a way to express that, and there are ways that are genuine, and there are ways that express some of it, but not all of it, and there are ways that express it. And that's really the case. In fact, I actually met David Koresh. Do you remember David Koresh? David Koresh had a group in Waco, Texas, that also, I think they all killed themselves. I actually met him. How did I meet him? When I went to rent the Israelite dorm on Chabad Street, he was renting that apartment before Israelite took it over. So I walked in there and he was sitting there. I didn't know who he was. He told me his name. He was nobody at that time. He'd come to Israel to explore spirituality. He'd actually been in some of the yeshivas, but he's not Jewish. But with a name like Koresh, it kind of sounds Jewish. And I'm telling you, when I found out who he was, you know, like a couple of years later, I said, wait, that's the guy I met in the Israelite, you know, before Israelite, you know. If you look in the dorm, it says on the wall, Davy slept here. No, I'm just joking. But he wasn't a charismatic guy. I mean, I certainly didn't sense anything unusual or really quite magnetic or about the guy. Go figure, he has people that so believe him that they died for this guy. It's unbelievable. But that's what goes on. You need to take care of your soul. Because the soul intuits it has come to this world to do something significant. The soul intuits that it's part of something, or to be more correct, some, or a one greater. And that our lives are meaningful only when we are a means to an end greater than ourselves. When we see ourselves as the be-all and end-all of life, that's really the end of our lives. But to feel that I'm a means to some great cause that I'm even willing to die for. And it's a very deep need of the human being. The need to believe. And you're going to have to serve somebody. You just have to decide who you want to serve. Your congressman, your president, your boss, or God. But this is the natural movement of the soul. And so when people are starving, when they haven't properly nourished their soul, they will be vulnerable to embrace just the first, you know, emphatic philosophy that is presented to them with the greatest amount of, you know, fervor, passion. And you're like, people buy into this today? People actually believe that? I mean, I went to visit somebody, and the house manager opened the door, and he said, oh, you're the rabbi that wrote those books on Kabbalah. So I said, well, yes, have you had a chance to look at them? He said, oh, I'm not allowed to look at them. I said, oh, your employer doesn't allow you to look at the books in the house? Oh, no, it's not my employer, but I'm involved with another organization that told me I'm only allowed to read their books. I thought to myself, and do you buy that? I mean, like, to me, if I was ever in an organization that told me that, I'd run the other way. And this guy with the sweetest smile, he says, no, they told me I'm not allowed to be. What? You know, it's unbelievable. So Rav Kook is saying that actually, in all cultures and in all religious philosophy, we see only the expansion of the central point, the natural feeling of faith and simple piety. Faith, emunah, that deep sense of connection to a greater who, that's natural. But now, what do you do? How do you express it? How do you expand it? How do you intensify it? And you know, I'm embarrassed to say I'm religious. I try to stay away from using such terminology. Because what's being done in the name of religion, it's terrible. So I once did a talk called, God is your problem and God is your answer. How our beliefs make or break our lives. And that's the question here. Who is the God that you perceive you should be in service of? Does your God tell you to hate other people, to kill other people? How could you religiously, spiritually believe that putting explosives in a bus could be an act of God? But it's that it can be that sick. It can be that sick. And, you know, in the story of Adam and Eve, really, the story reveals such a depth of the essential motivation of human beings. Because the snake, and whether this is a story to be taken literally or not, is not for now, but the snake, who is that seductive, evil spirit, whatever, what does he say to Adam and Eve about why they should eat from this tree of knowledge of good and bad? Does he say, hey, Adam, Eve, if you eat from this tree, you're going to be rich? No. He doesn't say that. He doesn't say, hey, Adam and Eve, if you eat from this tree, you're going to be famous. They're going to name apple juice after you. Whoa. Here's a hey, Adam, Eve. If you eat of this tree, you're going to have an amazing sex life. No. What does he say? He says, if you eat of this tree, you too shall be as gods, determining what's good, what's evil. Do you understand what was really the root of the first sin? It was a religious passion to experience their godliness. And that is the deep teaching of Judaism, that we only have one motive in our lives. It's to experience who we are, and that's when the confusion comes. Do we choose a lifestyle that genuinely empowers us to experience and express who we are, or do we choose a lifestyle that confusing us, a lifestyle that offers us some counterfeit, it seems to be delivering the goods, but it really isn't the goods. But what drives a human being is the soul, right? Whereby, I mean, psychology has asked this question a long time ago. What drives us? Freud, no expert on it, but most people know that he saw sexuality as the fundamental drive of the human being. Alfred Adler saw social acceptance, the search for honor, as the fundamental drive of the human being. Judaism says the fundamental drive of the human being is to be who you are. It's emunah. Emunah, the desire to faithfully portray who I am, is what drives me. But now, do I portray myself in a genuine way or in a counterfeit way? Whereby, yes, you have the right to feel empowered. You have the right to feel godly. But no, you're not God. Right? And the snake was saying, you too could be as God. You don't need God. You don't have to listen to him. You can do what you want. You can determine what's good for yourself, what's bad for yourself. You don't need some authority figure in your life telling you. And you know why God is giving you these commandments? Because he's trying to keep you under his cosmic thumb. He wants to subordinate you. He wants to undermine your desire to achieve who you know you could be. Because you know you are godly. You know you are powerful. You know you are significant. And therefore, well, but Rabbi, we see people running after sex, money, and fame. No, that's because they think that sex, money, and fame will deliver to them the experience of their soul. Right? Their godliness. If I'm famous, I'm like God. Everybody knows God. Right? If I have the money, I'm powerful. If I have that sex life, then I feel that connectivity to a greater. These are all counterfeits. They don't have to be counterfeits, but very often they are all counterfeits of the essential and primary and single motivation of the human being, which is I just want to be me. But really we have to say, I just want to be we, right? Because in the deepest, deepest depth of the soul realizes that the soul is not whole, but a part of the divine. And whereby the snake is seducing Adam and Eve that you can establish and express your godliness by rebelling against God and setting yourself up as an independent God, the real answer is the way you experience your godliness is by serving God. Right? And that service becomes the genuine path. But even those who say, okay, I want to serve God, but even that needs refining, right? Because if you're walking down the street and you hear someone go, Al Akbar, get out of the way, because they might be about to stab you, but what they just said is God is great, and then they stab you and kill you. Right? And there was a terrible, all terrorist acts, terrible, but a fellow ran down the street, took a knife and started stabbing a woman's child, baby. The woman, to protect her child, jumped over a child and he started stabbing her. And this Israeli fellow there, who saw this, pulled out his gun and shot the terrorist. So an Israeli journalist, interviewing the man who saved the woman, said, so, how does it feel to kill a human being? So he said, I don't know. I've never killed a human being. Right? But where could this come from with such religious zeal? So religion is the answer, and religion is the problem. Right? Because there is this fervor, this natural tendency to a religious life. Now, you might be religiously a basketball player. You might be religiously a Grateful Dead fan. You might be religiously immersed in the stock market. But it's all only one motivation. It's the soul trying to experience its godliness. A sense of the significant, a sense of the powerful, a sense of the meaningful, right? A sense of the ideal. But it's all one expansion. And therefore when people say, well, I'm not a religious personality, there's just no such thing. Judaism says there's no such thing. And what does religion literally mean? Religios. Religios means to connect, like ligament. Re means to reconnect. So we're actually trying to reconnect with our source. It's a natural movement of the soul to want to reconnect. But you might adopt very unnatural ways and very destructive ways that seem to be delivering the goods, but they don't. And that's what's so scary. So incredibly scary. Let's have some questions at this point.
So, Rabbi Aaron, you say that this is like our natural drawing, basically. This is
yes. What motivates the human being is emunah. Emunah is the motivation of the human being. The desire to experience and make manifest the basic essence of the soul, which is the divine and your connection to the divine. That experience of the individual self as bound up and connected to a universal ultimate self, and the experience of being a channel, an individualized manifestation of that divinity. But if you don't articulate it that way, you just are a crane trying to figure yourself out. You have these deep intuitive experiences about yourself. I'm powerful, I'm meaningful, I'm meant to move big things. So you try to figure out what to do to express that, right? And you can start, you know, knocking down buildings rather than lifting up bricks.
It's so interesting that this information is such a basic information. And you would think that would be the first thing you would learn whenever you were learning in Judaism. But it's never talked about.
Well, so that's exactly what we're trying to do. Well, that's what's so sad. You see, you know, I have found that there's too much of an attitude of persuading rather than educating. And the problem with the Jewish people is not that they're not orthodox. The problem with the Jewish people is they're not educated. Right? So my goal, our goal, Israelite's goal, is not to create a generation of Orthodox Jew. Don't get me wrong. I would love to see everyone embrace the Torah life, and I passionately believe in it. But that's not realistic right now in terms of the problem. Right? The problem isn't how many skull cups can we sell. The problem is our people need to go right back to the basics, which are the deepest. Right. Which are the deepest. In fact, the Vilna Gaon, one of our great sages, said that the Kabbalah is the pshat. The Kabbalah is the simplest meaning, because it takes you right down to the essence of what it really means. And so it's really just defining terms. So what motivates us? What makes me move? It's me. But then I realize that there's no such thing as a me independent of a we. And these are really, you know, points that you can know inside yourself. This is not something that you need to read or need to, you know, like prove. It's something we all say, yeah, that's right. I just know that in myself. And the question is, well, what do you do about that? How do you facilitate that drive for your sense of real worth? Right? So we're in the world where, you know, essentially what I've seen is there are basically three needs that all human beings have. We all need to feel significant, valued, that our life makes a difference, that we matter. I've never met a person who doesn't have that need. Right? We all need to feel loved, a sense of belonging to some greater relationship beyond just ourselves. And we all need to feel that we're growing, that we're evolving. Okay? And now the question is, how do you do that in a genuine way? Or do you get sucked into counterfeits? Right? So the counterfeits are easy. How do I feel significant about myself? Well, I try to get a lot of people to know my name. Right? I wear very ostentatious clothing so I can get attention. I remember I was in the airport and I didn't have much to do, so I started looking in the jewelry store and I was shocked how much some of this stuff costs. I thought, why would someone wear so, it's so expensive. Wouldn't you feel like neurotic wearing that? And it dawned on me that I really understood the meaning of, she looks like $1 million. Right? You want to look like $1 million. Now, why would anybody want to look like $1 million when $1 million are green? Right? You want to look green. I mean, what does it mean? But you look like $1 million. But that makes me feel like I'm valuable if I'm wearing very valuable clothing. But is that really going to make you feel valuable? Or is that some quick fix with the hope that somehow I'm identified with wealth, so I must be truly wealthy? That's what happens. I have a friend who told me that they found that the whole culture of the hotel world is that people are actually paying to be treated nice. Because you walk into the hotel, how are you, sir? How's it going, sir? Is there anything we can do for you, sir? Please, we're here for you, sir. And that really there's a whole culture, the whole hotel culture is this escape. You're really paying not for the room. You're paying for the service. You're paying for people to smile at you and treat you like you matter, right? I remember Kirk Douglas told me that when he got to the King David Hotel, he said to his wife, honey, I can't believe this. I've never been in a hotel that has so honored me. Everything here, look, the cups have KD on it. The towels have KD on it. I mean, honey, this is unbelievable. His wife says, he wasn't joking. His wife says, sweetie, KD, not Kirk Douglas, King David. He said, oh. And then he says, you know, everyone, oh, good day, sir, and have this. And then we got into the elevator. As the doors closed and he and I are standing in the elevator alone, he turns to me and says, they kill you with their kindness. But you're paying for that. Because, you know, where do you go out in the world that people say, good to see you, sir. How are you, sir? So you really pay for that. You pay to feel valued. But is that genuine? And love. How many people confuse sex with love? Sex has very little to do with love, right? Love has much to do with sex, but sex has very little with love. So, it's unbelievable people's need. I was embarrassing. I was on a plane. There's a woman sitting, you know, on the row next. She sits beside this total stranger, right? Total stranger. The flight wasn't very long, and within the shortest amount of time, they're making out on the plane. I had my kid, it was very uncomfortable, right? I mean, like, he doesn't even know her, she doesn't even know him, total strangers sitting next to each other within a short amount of time are romantically making out, and you know what? They didn't even get off the plane together. That really shocked me, right? They just said goodbye. It was like so needy. This like hope that if someone shows me some love, someone gives me that warmth, that that'll do it for me. Right? It was crazy. Just totally crazy. So people want to feel loved. They want to feel connected. So how do you feel connected? You want to feel part of a community. So, I could buy the same shmata across the street, but if I can walk down the street with the Gap bag, then I'm part of the Gap culture. If I can have that swoosh, right, then I'm part of Nike, and they're successful. We want to feel part of success, right? I mean, what drives people to have t-shirts of famous individuals? You know, people walking down the street with a t-shirt with Michael Jackson's face on it. Now, in the early days of Michael Jackson, he did pictures with monkeys. He was very much into it. He had a friend that was a monkey, which probably would have helped him, and not because the monkey wouldn't have taken him to court. So maybe he should have stayed with monkeys. But you know, you think of it. So he had a lot of t-shirts with him and his monkey. He traveled all over with this monkey. In fact, one of my students, his brother was one of his lawyers. And he said, like, he had this whole legal issue. I had to get this monkey into, like, one of the countries he was traveling. So there were these t-shirts with Michael and his monkey. Right? You say, why would you want to wear a t-shirt with this guy on it? Why? Because he's successful. He's somebody that I perceive to really embody whatever I believe is valuable to embody, and I want to identify with him, right? It's the whole culture. And now marketing is so smart, they know that people aren't interested in things anymore. It's not about things, it's about new things. So I read an article about the branding of corporations and how corporations know that people are looking for something bigger to be part of. So, you know, phone companies or cell phones are not going to sell you phones. They're going to sell you connecting people. So you feel like, oh, if I buy this phone, I'm part of connecting people. IBM, according to this article, rarely shows in ads a computer. Because you're not interested in buying a computer. But their ad is about being part of a network of connectivity. And buying this computer is a manifestation of the fulfillment of connectivity. Right? Or Nike, what does that have to do with Just Do It? Which is really I think it's a Zen Buddhist idea of, but what buying shoes got to do with Just Do It. But they take a spiritual philosophy, they connect it to a item, because they know that that's what people want to feel. They want to feel part of something greater, something transcendent. But is that really going to do it for you in the bigger picture? And a person wants to feel like they're growing. Well, so my property's growing, my wardrobe is growing, my money is growing. But we make the mistake to think that if I have more, I am more. And who says so? But these are all counterfeits, but it's all coming from emunah. There's this deep, deep, intuitive knowing that I am valuable, that I am connected, that I am a dynamic, growing entity. And you know why? Because you are. You are valuable because you are a divine light ray. Of course, how can a ray of divine light be anything less than divinely valuable? And of course, you want to feel loved and connected because you are loved. You are connected because Hashem, God, loves you with the very love he loves himself. Because you're an aspect of himself. And of course you want to grow. Because you've been put on earth to rise to challenges and to make choices and to serve to bring God's peace in the world, God's love in the world, which means to conquer battles, to conquer hatred. So yes, you're right. You got it. We know what we want. We just don't know what will truly fulfill what we want, right? And it just goes on and on. All these disorders is all just a part of, right, inappropriate, dysfunctional ways to get what every soul wants to get. That's what I mentioned before. What my first Shabbat I ever had was so shocking because there was something so familiar about it, and I realized it was all those rock concerts I was going to. It was a sense of community. It was a sense of letting go. It was a sense of some harmonic peacefulness in my soul. And like the rock concerts delivered it for maybe an hour or two, but it wasn't a culture. It wasn't a community I could join. It wasn't like, let's get together and do this every week. And it also was very expensive, you know, where people invite you for Shabbos and you know. So, but like the soul knows who it is, who it's part of. But now it has to try and articulate in words and find lifestyle that will genuinely satisfy what it knows about itself so that it can, you can, express and experience your truth and God's truth. And all religions is like this. They're all working on the same premise. Otherwise, why would there be so many religions? Why would there be so many cults? It's all coming from the soul seeking to manifest, experience, and express the truth it knows so deep and so deep and so real inside. And have no doubt about it. Now the question is, so what is a genuine path and what is a counterfeit path? And there's just so many counterfeit paths. I remember an ad. I was watching television and this commercial came on. And it had this beautiful music. And in this commercial, there was a real spiritual feel to the commercial. And you experience yourself walking through this forest with these beams of light, sun rays, piercing through the branches and the leaves towards you, and this sense of you journeying towards this light, and you kind of felt like you were the camera, so you kind of like felt yourself walking towards this light. And then the narration was this real compassionate, warm voice that said, "Life is a journey." And I'm like, yeah. I'm thinking, my gosh, a commercial about spirituality, a commercial about meaning. Life is about seeking the light. Whoa, I'm wondering who came up with this. This is fantastic. And in your journey towards the light, be sure you're wearing Heritage jeans. Yes, Heritage jeans for only $39.99. I couldn't believe it. This was a commercial for jeans. And they really address the soul, and then boom, they give you something else.